Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Magnolia Public Schools regular board meeting. My name is Jennifer Lara. I'm the Executive Assistant and Board Secretary at Magnolia Public Schools. Before we begin, a couple of reminders. First, this meeting is being recorded. Second, if you're a member of the public and you'd wish to make a comment during the public comment section of this meeting, you're more than welcome to state your name. If it is something that you feel uncomfortable in doing so, you do not have to state your name. However, as a reminder to our board and staff, please state your name, before giving your comment or your question. Lastly, because this is a packed agenda for those who are presenting tonight, please adhere to the time you are allotted for your section. And with that, we'll officially begin tonight's regular board meeting. The day is Thursday, October 14th. The time is 6:33 p.m. With that, I ask Ms. Covarrubias if you may please call the meeting to order.
Good evening, everybody, again. Thank you for being here. I would like to officially call our meeting to order, please.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. With that, I'll take roll call. Ms. Covarrubias?
Here.
Dr. Yalpino?
Yes.
Hello, good evening.
Hello.
Dr. Digbush?
Here.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Here.
Thank you to our board members. We have quorum to continue tonight's meeting. Next, we'll move on to approval of agenda. The motion is to approve the agenda as presented. Would a board member like to move the motion?
I'll move the motion. It's Diane.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. Is there a second?
Second. This is Nikon.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. I'll now take roll call vote. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Dr. Yalpino?
Yes.
Dr. Digbush?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you to our board members. The agenda has been approved as presented. Next, we'll move on to public comments. As a reminder, you're given 3 minutes to state your comments, 6 minutes if translation is needed. If there is a member of the public that would like to make a comment, you may unmute yourself now.
Hello, board members and everyone on the call. This is Dr. Lopez, Chief External Officer of Magnolia Public Schools. I just want to give a great acknowledgement to all of our partners who have worked with us since we started our vaccination clinics and community resource activities and fair. We've been able to support more than 180 people who have been vaccinated, starting off with our September 25th event at MSA 7, and Saturday, Saturday, October 16th, we'll be hosting MSA 1 and MSA 5, the Community Resource Fair, which is actually the second shot for anybody who got the first shot at MSA 7. So we look forward to hosting that event and continue to support the efforts of inviting our community partners onto our sites as well as the community. Hope to see you guys there. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lopez. Is there another public comment? Perfect. If there's no further comments from the public, we'll move forward with the agenda. Next, with the announcements from CEO and superintendent and board members, I'll turn this over to Mr. Rubalcaba.
Thank you, Jen. Good evening, board members, Magnolia staff and family and community. This is Alfredo Rubalcaba, CEO and superintendent. The only update I have is obviously this week is the week of the school administrator, and I would be remiss if I didn't thank our school administrators again for all of their efforts this year. This year, we've learned so much from opening schools with a full slate of students. We've learned quite a bit from independent study. We've learned quite a bit with weekly COVID testing and vaccinations, which you'll hear throughout the presentation. And I think all this has been made possible by the work and effort of our school administrators. So just want to give them a shout out here on public record and just say that we're very grateful for them and continue the great work. With that, I will be addressing any questions or giving input as we go through the presentations. Thank you. Back to you, Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Rubalcaba. I'll turn this over to any board members who has a comment.
I have some comments, but I'm trying to get to a more stable location. Once I do that, I'd like to talk to the other board members in about 10, 15 minutes.
All righty, sounds good, Dr. Yavana. Is there any comments from our other board members before proceeding? Perfect. If not, we'll move forward with the agenda. Next, with the approval of minutes from the MPS regular board meeting from September 9th, 2021. And the special board meeting on September 23rd, 2021. If there's no objections from our board members, we can vote these minutes together in one motion. Is there any objections?
No.
Perfect. If not, the motion is to approve the minutes from the regular board meeting on September 9th, 2021, and the special board meeting on September 23rd, 2021. Would a board member like to move the motion?
I'll move it. I'm Sandra.
Thank you, Ms. Colorubias. Is there a second?
Second, Nikon.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. I'll now take roll call vote. Ms. Colorubias?
Yes.
Dr. Yalpanov?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you to our board members. The minutes for September 9th and September 23rd, 2021 has been approved. Moving on with the agenda, we have closed session. And with that, I ask Ms. Covarrubias if you may please announce the closed session items.
Yes, we're going to closed session to discuss two matters. One is conference with real property negotiators for Magnolia Science Academy 1, and two, public employment.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. With that, for those that need to join closed session, the room has been open. For those here in open session, you're more than welcome to turn off your mics and your cameras for when open session commences again. We're anticipating around 45 minutes for closed session.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Of course. Right, welcome back everyone to open session. The time is 7:14 p.m. Ms. Covarrubias, so you may please report out of closed session.
Yes, I would like to report out. We discussed two items and we directed the staff to follow up with the items.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias, for reporting out. Before moving on, I'll open it up if there's any comments from the public. Perfect. If not, we'll move on to consent items, starting with 3A, approval of 2021 through 22 compliance monitoring and certification of board compliance review for MSA 4, 6, 7, and Bell. I'll turn this over to Mr. Yilmaz, our Chief Accountability Officer.
Good evening, dear board members, school leaders and community members. This is a routine annual compliance item for LAUSD. They are asking our board chair to sign that our LAUSD schools are compliant in the areas indicated on that document. There are 27 areas. Last year they had 25. They just added two more regarding Title IX. Which our board already approved the policy. It's in our handbooks, posted on the websites. Schools have Title IX teams. So we assure that as the home office and, you know, school leaders, that our schools are compliant in all of those areas. And, you know, we have brought all those policies to the board before you approved them. And, you know, time to time we present them to you. So we're just asking that our board chair sign the certification. The principals already did. It's now the board chair's turn to sign. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Yilmaz. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item? Perfect. If not, we'll move on to the next consent item, 3B. We'll make a motion for all consent items at the end. So 3B is approval of 2021 through 22 compliance monitoring and certification of board compliance review for MSA Santa Ana. Once again, this will be presented by Mr. Ilmas, our Chief Accountability Officer.
This item is very similar to the other one. The other one was for LEFT schools. This one is for our MSA Santa Ana, which is approved by the State Board of Education. A very similar certification form. It has 19 areas of compliance, and we are compliant in all of them. We have supporting documentation posted on the school website or at the, on file at the school site, and we get an oversight visit annually where they check our compliance in all of those areas. Again, the principal signed it, and as home office, we also assure that the school meets all of those requirements. So we are just asking our board chair to kindly sign the certification.
Thank you, Mr. Amos. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item? If there are no comments or questions, the motion is to approve all items under consent agenda as presented. Would a board member like to move the motion?
I'll make the move, Covarrubias.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Is there a second?
Second, Yapanel.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanel. I'll now take roll call vote. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Dikpach?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez? Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you to our board members. The consent items have been approved unanimously. Next, we move on to action items, starting with 4A, approval of AG Construction to provide services for all Magnolia Public Schools. This was presented to the Audit and Facilities Committee. I'll turn this over to Mr. Mohamedov as the chair. Mr. Mohamedov, you may please report out.
Yes, thanks, Jennifer. Good evening again, board members, staff, and the community. This was brought to a facility committee meeting last week. So basically, this is actually a bit of a more of a correction to the original document that was approved by the board back in February of 2020. So this AG Construction was chosen to do some improvement work at MSA 7. Since then, AG Construction has done 3 to 4 projects throughout Magnolia, and board staff seeks to correct that motion to AG Construction, allowing AG Construction to do work across other projects in Magnolia. Original approval was for up to $35,000. And per staff's confirmation, none of the other projects exceeded $35,000. Therefore, a facility committee recommends to amend and approve AG Construction bid for all other Magnolias.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments? There are no questions or comments. I believe, Mr. Ontiveros, if you have anything else to add for this item.
Yes, good evening, board. This is Patrick Ontiveros, General Counsel and Director of Facilities. I just wanted to make one recommendation as far as the proposal. It really doesn't change the intent. I think it just clarifies the language based on the discussion that we did have at the facilities committee meeting. What we're really asking the board to do is to place AG Construction on our preferred vendor list. So, I mean, it more or less says the same thing. It's just, you know, just to be a little bit clearer, that would allow us going forward to apply the rules about, you know, what projects need to come to the board for approval, what projects require three bids, this kind of thing. It would give us more flexibility. AG Construction has proved to be a good partner to us and has tackled multiple projects on fairly short notice. So they have been a good partner. So I would propose the following language. And again, it's an amendment of the existing language. The Facilities Committee and staff recommend and move that the Board of Directors approve AG Construction as a construction services vendor for all Magnolia schools and be added to Magnolia's preferred vendor list retroactively as of July 1st, 2021, the start of Magnolia's fiscal year. So the change there is AG Construction be added to Magnolia's preferred vendor list. And secondly, instead of making it January 1st, I thought it'd be more appropriate to use our fiscal year, the beginning of our fiscal year. So that would be my proposed amendment to the language, basically just kind of cleaning it up based on our discussions at the Facilities Committee. I should have been presented at the committee, but it wasn't. And I thought now would be an appropriate time to make that correction, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms.
Patrick, can you repeat that again, please? Your sure. Recommendation?
Yes, yeah, sure. So it's, we would amend the language as follows. So the Facilities Committee and staff recommend and move that the Board of Directors approve AG Construction as a construction services vendor for all Magnolia Public Schools. And this is where the amendment comes in, and be added to Magnolia's preferred vendor list retroactively as of, and previously it read January 1st, 2021. I thought it would be more appropriate to use the start of our fiscal year, July 1st, 2021. So those are the, I guess, three text changes, adding the Facilities Committee and in front of staff, after Magnolia Public Schools, add the language and be added to Magnolia's preferred vendor list. And then finally, as of, instead of January 1st, it would be July 1st, 2021, the start of Magnolia's fiscal year.
With that, I'll open it up to questions again, if there's any questions or comments from the members of the public. If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments with that added context?
So this was discussed in facilities, you said?
It was, yes. And basically what we realized that we had not included that language about preferred vendor, which is essentially what we're asking the board to do. And I can, just as a side note, I will add the language that I'm proposing in the chat just so you can reference it.
Is the whole board okay with this amendment?
So Patrick, so since the facility meeting, we are also changing the date from, because during the facility meeting, it was the January 1st, 2021.
Yeah.
Now we're changing it to July 2021, am I right?
That is correct. Yes. Okay. I thought, yeah.
And the original language that you submitted actually at the facilities meeting, preferred vendor for construction services actually was there.
Mm-hmm.
It was there.
Okay.
So what? I'm sorry. That. What date?
As a construction.
Yeah. You had explained that to us, and it is in the language. I don't think you need to change anything or add at this meeting. So I think we're kind of clear. Just double check on it, please. On the background, you do mention the preferred vendor, and Ms. Gonzalez will recall too, I think, that you explained that since this is under 50,000, it will be in the preferred list and so on and so forth. So only change I'm seeing is from January 1st, you're changing it to July 1st, 2021.
Right.
Yes.
That would be the only change I can see.
Yeah, other than that, I think we're good.
Okay, that's fine. As I just wanted to make abundantly clear that that's what we were doing. So thank you. Just want to make sure it's clear.
Mekan, I'm sorry. Where do you see that language? Because on our...
So if you go under the background, Discover Rubius?
Yes, under general.
So the first, under the proposed recommendation, then there's background, right? Mm-hmm. Jennifer is actually showing it on the screen as well. So that paragraph, second part of that paragraph, as part of such approvals, staff had intended to recommend that AG Construction be approved as a preferred vendor for construction services for LLMPS schools.
Hold on.
Okay.
Because
So it's on the first page, second item, that's under background.
And LPMS schools is underscored.
Yes.
My language is different.
Yeah. Are you looking at agenda item number 4A?
Hold on, I'm sorry, hold on. Okay, I see where you're, okay, I see it now. So you don't want the language change? Is that what you're indicating?
I mean, no. I would leave it up to Patrick, absolutely. Whatever he deems is right. He has the legal background and he's recommending this. All I'm saying is that we did discuss that this vendor would be in the preferred vendor list. I kind of got an idea. I mean, if somebody was missing the facilities meeting, they would assume that this was not discussed. This was in the language and it was discussed. So from what I'm understanding, Patrick, you're trying to make it even more clear. Am I right?
Yeah, and the only language, the only language I would suggest that we add, just for clarity's sake, because it's, I think we all who are in this meeting know what the intent is. My concern would be that, you know, somebody later on without the background comes back and says, oh, well, they weren't really on your preferred vendor list. Mm-hmm. I think it might be save us future heartaches if we just say as a construction vendor and be added to the preferred vendor list. We can leave the January 1st date as is. I don't have a strong feeling about that one.
Okay. I think we should do July if anybody has an objection on that date. Just because I remember you bringing it to us, to our attention in July as well. Right? If I'm not mistaken?
I don't recall exactly, but that does sound familiar.
Yeah, because we've, aside from the January meeting, I know we've touched this.
Yeah, before, yeah, that's that. So. That's correct.
So are you guys okay with Patrick's recommendation and that way Jennifer can read it to us and we can vote on it?
I have a question.
Sure.
So how often do we review this preferred vendor list? The reason I'm asking is past performance may not be indication of future performance. Like we sign up and then I don't know if they start overcharging, et cetera, since they are in the preferred, it's kind of like, how do we prevent ourselves from such situations? Like, do we review yearly or in 2 years? How does it work?
This is Patrick. My understanding is we, on an annual basis, we bring a preferred vendor list to the board to be voted upon. And it, I believe, and I know for our department, we are asked, you know, who we would want put on this list. So that's what we've done, you know, on a recurring basis, on an annual basis. Certainly, if anybody is not performing, you know, speaking for the facilities department, we would not include them on that preferred vendor list, and we wouldn't use them again. So we would be very cautious if we were to engage them again. So again, it's on an annual basis. I don't think it's more frequent than that, but anybody else on the C team could correct me on that. And it's, you know, the names on the list are revisited, you know, at that time.
Okay, if there's no objection, I would like to adopt the new recommendation that Patrick gave with the new language.
Okay, if there's no objections, I'll read the amended motion that Patrick provided. So the amended motion is for the Board of Directors to approve AG Construction as a construction services vendor for all Magnolia Public Schools and be added to Magnolia's preferred vendor list retroactively as of July 1st, 2021, the start of Magnolia's fiscal year. Would a board member like to move the motion?
I'll move the motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias, for seconding, and Ms. Gonzalez for moving the motion. I'll take roll call vote. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanol?
Yes.
Dr. Dikpesh?
Abstain.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you to our board members. The motion carries with 4 yeas and 1 abstaining. Next, we'll move on to action item 4B, approval of Magnolia Public Schools revised independent study policy. This will be presented by Mr. Ajar, our chief academic officer.
Yes, good evening, board members. This is Arden Ajar, chief academic officer. The item in front of you is a repeat item and updated policy. We all remember we updated and brought this to your attention in the August 10 meeting. The independent studies are programs that we offer in our schools with COVID-19 pandemic and the option given to the parents. The program has been updated at the legislative level with AB 130 before, and subsequently we approved our revised independent study policy. On September 23rd, this program being new and many districts and schools are struggling with it, and the feedback from the stakeholders, the independent study program has been revised again with AB 167, which I mentioned in the cover letter. Sure. And that trail bill updated the independent study program in several areas, specifically a few areas that impacted our independent study policy, which we worked with our legal counsel, YMNC, and updated our independent study policy again. And those updates are highlighted in red line and in the clean version of the independent study policy. You know, to summarize, some of the re-engagement strategies, some of the notification requirements are impacting our policy, and we have done the required language change in the policy. Also, the cover letter summarizes the AB 167 revisions in the bill affecting all the other aspects of the education in our schools. With that, I'll turn over to Jen for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rajar. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item? There's no questions or comments. The motion is for the board to approve the revised independent study policy for Magnolia Public Schools. Would a board member like to move the motion?
I'll move it. Covarrubias.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Is there a second?
Second, Mekhan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. I'll now take roll call vote. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanov?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you to our board members. The motion carries with a unanimous vote. Next on the agenda, we'll move on to information and discussion items, starting with 5A, MPS suspension, expulsion procedure, and positive behavioral intervention strategies, PBIS. This will be presented by Mr. Hernandez, our Director of Student Services.
Hey, good afternoon or good evening, everybody. This is Jason Hernandez, Director of Student Services. So I'm gonna be presenting a PowerPoint, well, a Word, a PDF document to you all that's titled MPS Suspension Expulsion Procedure and Positive Behavior Intervention Strategies, PBIS. So the reason for this is our authorizers require us to ensure that our board members are fully versed in the procedures of suspension and expulsion. So that's the purpose of this meeting today. Here you have MPS data. This is across all our MPS 10 schools that we have dating back from 2017 all the way up to 2021. You'll have your numbers of suspensions and school suspensions and expulsions. Of course, the year 2021 was the year that we did for the most part remotely up until the end of April. So that's why you do have a low numbers there. We can change to the next page, please. So even though the purpose of this is really to talk about suspension and expulsion, I want to make sure that you're all aware that we do take preventative steps, preventative measures at our schools. Here you have some promising practices that are actually built in into our handbook. And it's my job to support our deans of students and principals to ensure that we have some NTSS practices as well as PBIS practices in there. So you'll see this in the handbook. The CASEL framework is here. We do support our students' SEL. And that's been, that was actually one of our discussion items this afternoon with our deans of students. How can we continue to support our SEL and the need to support our students' SEL, as well as for our staff members? So if you go to the next page, please. So these are some proactive approaches to discipline. So the big thing is building strong relationships. That's key, that's foundational, and that's one of our hallmarks here at Magnolia Public School. We want to make sure that we're teaching the norms and expectations to our kids. We want to make sure we're using positive language when redirecting our students. We want to recognize student effort and growth. Here on the right side, you do have two samples. MSA 5 does a token economy, and so kids are able to earn these how bucks and turn them in for some prizes. Over here at the right-hand side, MSA 4 does a focus on reading every month. And so when kids meet their certain goals, they get recognized by being able to wear free dress on their campus. And so these are just some examples that we have on our campuses of things that we do to be proactive in our measures. So hopefully we're not having to resort to suspension and expulsion. We really want suspension and expulsion as our last resort. If you could change the slide, please. All right, so suspension offenses and procedures. So just so you know, our handbook, if you take a look at our handbook from pages 82 through 89, it'll outline the suspension process for you. It'll go over what are items considered discretionary offenses, meaning that the school site has the option of determining whether it constitutes a suspension or not. Non-discretionary or mandatory suspension are also listed in our handbook, and these are by ed code. There are about five items that are, it's guaranteed suspension. That's your firearm, brandishing a knife, unlawfully selling controlled substance, sexual battery, and possession of an explosive. Those are absolutely mandatory. So the way a suspension procedure works is outlined on page 88 through 89. There is obviously a conference that's set up between the parents or the families and the student. And part of this conference is the parents presented with the evidence that's been collected and the ed code that's been broken up, which outlines how many days of suspension the student will get. And then every time a student is suspended, we do want to ensure that they're still able to progress academically. So we do ensure that they get their academic work that they can complete during the suspension period. Parents are informed that they do have the option to appeal the suspension. And when that meeting is arranged, a committee will determine whether it's upheld or not upheld. And then there's also suspension time limits. And then there's also recommendation for expulsion, which is listed on page 89. If we can go to the next page, please. Awesome. So expulsion, again, these are last resorts. We really don't want to get to this, but just like suspension, there are discretionary expellable offenses and there are non-discretionary expellable offenses. The ones that I read off for you as mandatory suspension, it's the same thing for mandatory, non-discretionary expellable offenses, and those can be found on page 88. So the procedure for expulsion is a little different. This is where it really gets more complex. The principal will make a recommendation for expulsion. They'll provide this notice to the guardian. And a hearing takes place. And this hearing, you know, we try to compose non-biased members from our local MPS schools. And when this panel is composed, then we have the presentation of evidence and then a written notice to expel. The panel will determine whether to expel the student or not. The families do have the option to appeal an expulsion, and that's where our MPS board comes in. So should we ever get to the point where we do have an expulsion and the family does decide to appeal this expulsion, that's where the next slide comes in. So this is where MPS would be, where our MPS board would be involved. And I'm going to read this one because, again, this one outlines the steps and procedures where you are ultimately responsible. In order to appeal an expulsion, the student, parent, guardian must submit a written appeal to the CEO of MPS outlining the reasons for the appeal, attaching any supporting documents within 10 calendar days of being informed of the expulsion. In response to the written request for an appeal, the CEO of MPS shall call a meeting of the board of directors. The board shall convene a hearing on the appeal within 30 calendar days of receipt of a timely written request for an appeal. At the hearing on the appeal, the student shall have the right to present evidence. The board will consider evidence and or testimony as appropriate and will render a written decision that shall be in the best interest of the students and the MPS. And that decision will be final. So once the expulsion gets appealed, it goes to you, whatever decision you make as a board, that's ultimately final. And if the expulsion upholds, there is a reinstatement plan that is created. And a year from the date of expulsion, the student is able to re-enroll at the school as long as they met certain criteria that were laid out in the reinstatement plan. Okay, and then the last slide over here. These are things looking ahead. So again, you know, it's suspension expulsions are kind of the hard things to digest and talk about. We hope to save those as last resorts, but we do have to put them into our policies and have a game plan should we ever come across those situations. But like I said, we try to be as proactive as possible. We want to continue building on some of the promising practices that have been out there. Dr. Lopez has done a great job. She's been a great mentor to me, and she's outlined a lot of different systems and processes in place, which we hope to continue and continue build upon. We want to continue to have a structured approach to tracking supports and data. It's very important for our deans of students and our administrators in general to be tracking data in order to inform us as to what are the next steps we need to do. So as we transition to Infinite Campus, we continue to explore what resources are within Infinite Campus and other platforms that are out there. We continue to provide surveys to our school communities. We do a SEL survey in the fall, which we will be doing pretty soon, and we do one in the spring. And that is on top of the stakeholder survey that we use. The SEL survey kind of gives us a temperature gauge where our kids are at and what steps we need to take. We are heavily involved in MTSS. MTSS is a big focus on the whole child. So we're taking a look at the child's SEL, their academics, and we're taking a look at behavior. So it's not just, even though student services, we tend to think of behavior, there's a lot more to student services than just behavior. And through this whole child approach, we hope to again, be very proactive and provide the supports that our kids need so they can be successful and stay in school. We have zones of regulations. We started up during the pandemic, and that continues to be a conversation in our school sites, and we'll continue to explore those further options. The additional funding has provided additional school psychologists and school social workers. I wanna reiterate, we have school social workers. Our parents do get freaked out when you say they have social workers. So these are school social workers, they're school-based. They're there to support our families, check out what resources are within our communities that our families can take full advantage of. And then the last one, this one's gonna be our real big one. This one's, we're working alongside with Mr. Ajar, Mr. Yilmaz, and their the academic team and the accountability team and the finance team to create an award and incentive policy to support PBIS. Many of our teachers and staff members do go out of their way to purchase things to recognize kids' successes. And we want to make sure that we build in something within our policy so that the schools can make those purchases and be able to have more of these recognitions for our students. Our students deserve it. Every time they do well, they deserve to be recognized. And we want to make sure we have a policy around that so we can do it appropriately. So that's kind of my presentation. I know I'm short on 10 minutes. I did do one of these for our dean of students. It's much more extensive, but I'm here available to take any questions you all might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Yes, Jennifer, I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jason, first of all, congratulations on your new position.
Oh, thank you.
And second, do all of our schools practice PBIS?
Yes, they do. It's every school is, oh, sorry, this is Jason Hernandez again answering the question. Every school is at different levels when it comes to PBIS. There's many factors, you know, depending on teacher turnovers, depending if there's any new administrators. Some of our schools that have a veteran staff, they're well ahead of the game. And so one of my goals this year is to measure PBIS at all of our school sites and then be able to identify what are the supports they need. So I know there's a thing called the Fidelity Integrity Assessment. There's a FIA assessment that's used to measure PBIS. So we're collecting data. We're going to identify you know, what are areas that we need to support our schools, and hopefully we'll be able to bring that data to our MPS board so you all can know more about it.
Yeah, just from a mom's aspect, it's an amazing program. So if we can get that program extended to all the schools, it would be amazing, because I remember MSA 2, just the spirit completely changing and our students' outlooks towards just everything, education and just their relationships with other students and their teachers. It was just different just by this simple program and this amazing program. So it would be amazing to be able to have this program at the extent that MSA 2 had it, and just having parents involved in it as well as MSA 2 allowed us as well too.
Awesome. It's Jason Hernandez again. I totally agree with you. And I do want to recognize it's not necessarily a program. It's kind of a way of doing things, developing certain systems within the school. And so we'll definitely work across our all MPS schools to ensure that the same successes that you've been able to witness at MSA 2, that you'll see them across the board.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions from our board members?
Yeah, this is Mekon. Thanks, Jason, for putting this together and presenting. I have a question regarding the board level involvement. So it may be obvious, but I'm just trying to understand. So once the expulsion appeals, it says that once the parent appeals or student appeals, CEO has 10 days to respond, and then 10 days, and then CEO brings up to the board, in which case board has 30 days to respond, and that decision is final. During this period, what happens to the student? Does he wait or does he continue the education?
Yeah, so this is Jason Hernandez again. That's a very good question. And that's why, unfortunately, this is a process that's very hard to speak about. There are a lot of timelines that you mentioned, but theoretically speaking, a kid can be out of school for almost 60 days. And so it is our responsibility to ensure that they're getting education. We have to place them in an educational setting until the appeal process is completed. So you are right by that time.
What do you mean when you say like educational setting? Like they won't be in classroom, but will be somewhere at school or something else?
Yeah, so typically at that level involves us reaching out to our authorizers, and our authorizers sometimes will support us. Either maybe a child needs to be at a non-public school setting, or maybe some continuation school, or we arrange some kind of independent study. So when we get to that process, it's really a case by case, and our authorizers will help us find placement.
Got it. Now, these timelines are the minimal timelines, I'm assuming, and we can act faster if it reaches to that level. But these are just the general timelines, I'm assuming.
Yes, you are correct. But we do have to be within those timelines. And you're right, we can act sooner. But when you get to this level, it does require a large amount of manpower and collection of documents before it comes before our panels and our board.
Okay, thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
Any further questions or comments from our board members? If not, no further action is needed since this is just an informational item. Next, moving on with the agenda is 5B, enrollment update. This will be presented by Dr. Lopez, our Chief External Officer.
Good evening, board members and everyone on the call. Dr. Lopez, Chief External Officer. I'm here to present an update to the enrollment numbers, most importantly, our census data. as of October 6th, 2021. And so first I just want to present some information. So our GLOWs, looking at our growth as an organization historically, have been included in the report to the board, where it tells you some of the schools that have definitely increased in their enrollment historically. So you see MSA 1 increase, you've seen MSA 2 most currently 2021-2022 data, and MSA 4 is doing well currently. And also something to keep in mind historically, how not only demographics have changed in the community, but also some of our school sites have shifted locations. So keeping the context of the enrollment in mind for that as well. And then right below, you can scroll down, Jennifer. We also have overall enrollment historically for our organization. This one does include up until last school year. And one thing I just want to point out, we do know that the COVID impact on enrollment is something that we are still seeing, that we're continuing to see with our numbers. And we know that enrollment as a whole has declined across the nation. The promising points are that it did increase in charter schools across the nation, but not really in the Los Angeles area so much. And so when we look at our numbers, most recently, you can scroll down, Jen, for October 6th. So I know it says October 1st on there, but it's October 6th. This was the screenshot, as you know, census data. It's the snapshot of how many students are enrolled at our school that date. It does impact funding. So we want to make sure that that is the day where we have our highest enrollment. And we were actually holding pretty strong as I presented the enrollment numbers from August. We were under 79 students overall as an organization in August. And then in September, we were actually closer to our goal. We had dropped to that number went from 79 to 70. And then we ended up on October 6th with 76. We were under at 76. So these are the final numbers. So our projected enrollment, we were off by 76 as an entire organization. But keeping in mind, again, context-wise, if you think, well, you know, why was there that drop? A lot of it had to do with families leaving the state, housing being an issue, not being able to afford housing in the area, families just choosing. There's still a lot of fear as to bringing our students back to school. A lot of the data had to be cleaned up. A lot of those numbers we were waiting on, unfortunately, as we had communicated to the board previously in our community. When it comes to the independent study program, we still didn't have families who had fully committed to it. We were doing everything in our power to reach out to our families, to encourage them to communicate with us, let us know. But eventually, when the data was fully cleaned up, this is the final count as of October 6th. And there are some positive highlights, again, with MSA 1 up 17 students in their enrollment over the projected 730. MSA 2, they were up 22. But even MSA 2 in the great job that they did, they've still been impacted by the mandates as well. Unfortunately, right before capturing this information, we lost two students right before October 6th. And it had to do with the family deciding to go to a private school. And then that was right before at the same time as the governor's mandate. So still impacted by the mandates. And then, you know, our schools definitely did push. It's hard to get those enrollments, but we know a lot of it was overshadowed with making sure our main focus was opening safely and making sure that we were abiding by CDC guidelines and everything that our schools needed to open and be in person fully this school year. So we do see that enrollment was impacted, but we do have a lot of opportunities coming up. As you guys have seen, our community resource fairs that we're hosting, really getting our name out, ID out there and doing a lot of that work and strategizing with our teams. And so when it comes to the context, historically, I know Mr. Rubalcaba, I think you wanted to add a little more as to that, but the highlights is also our retention from the previous year is something that was holding strong. So that's also positive, especially as we are looking into the 2022-2023 school year, because that's now our goal. We quickly shift and pivot and making sure that we're focused on the upcoming enrollment year. Alfredo?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the positive is the fact that, you know, we went from 85% retention rate of students to 86, 18, 19, 19, 20. So we keep improving and we're going to do the final tally, but those should be closer to 90%. So the fact that we're retaining student is a clear indication that there's a connection and there's been, you know, the building of school culture. Obviously, the drop in specific schools does show a shift in those areas, and those areas have to be addressed on many levels. And those are the steps that we're taking to address those specific schools. And the thing I want to point out is the Valley definitely, you know, even with MSA 7, you know, if we did have more space and they were able to enroll more TK kindergarten, we would have seen positive improvements there. And then I do believe at 5, that we didn't have to move. I think the Valley is blossoming with enrollment opportunity, and the census data also, the 2020 census data also indicates that 30,000 people have moved into the Valley since 2010. So I think the Valley, definitely some blossoming happening. And then in other areas, like, you know, 8 and Santa Ana, definitely we've been doing some work to look at how do we change things up. And one of the things you said that you mentioned are the community fairs. I think those are super important. Those are things that we had done in the past, and we kind of stopped a little bit, but now those are ramping up. And then the name ID through different social media channels and just putting our name out there is something that we're doing. So I'll turn it back over to you, Brenda, with any final thoughts before we go to Jen and the board.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Bacaba. So is Dr. Lopez. Again, I just want to say that the efforts in enrollment is not something that's done by one area. So it's not just about social media. It's not just about canvassing our community. It really is about lifting every effort. So again, acknowledging our schools and the work that they're doing, and we highlight strengthening the academic programs, making sure the rigor is there. So if we're doing the work, if our schools are doing the work, which they are at the schools, and we can highlight that for our families, enrollment is secondary to all the work that is happening with PBIS and feeling that connection. It's no surprise with some of these leaders, they actually do, it's almost like their moment as they're saying goodbye to their graduating class, they're promoting all of their programs to the incoming students. So really taking advantage of those opportunities. And I really like to think of when you look at enrollment, especially because, you know, my position is something that we have invested in to make sure that we are looking at all our programs. We're looking at holistically how we can improve and highlight our strengths as an organization. I think of it as, like they say, a rising tide lifts all boats. It's not just, you know, one thing. It's a collective effort. So making sure that we're all on board with this. And I just want to, again, thank our board members who have connected, specifically Dr. Yapanow, who has reached out to our schools. We're also going to do a promo video with our Larson Communications. They're also coming out to our school sites to record, get some images from start to finish to also do a promo video across Magnolia Public Schools. not as an additional fee. It's part of already what we're doing with them. So those are things that we're putting into place that we're looking to make that change, but it is collective. And I thank everybody for being part of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lopez. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Yeah, Jennifer, this is Covarrubias Ida.
Yeah.
I noticed Mr. K left, so I wanted to ask him because I noticed that Bell and Santa Ana numbers are a little bit on the low side than what was projected. So I know Ms. Schlottman is here, so I was wondering if she has anything she wants to say.
Well, I think to be fair, I think if Jason is on, because Jason, Jason, are you on? I saw you, Jason.
Yes, okay. I am on here.
So Sandra, I think it's fair to start with Jason. Okay. And then we could go to Laura to just do a clear line. Go for it, Jason.
Yeah, so with Bell's situation, this one's been a hard one since the pandemic hit, because once the pandemic hit, we did see a lot of students actually transition out of the area. In fact, we had kids actually logging in from as far as Illinois, Arizona, out in different counties of Southern California. So we had a lot of them shift over. And then when I look at the other schools, because I don't know if you're familiar with our campus, but our campus does have three, it's a total of three academies. And when I look at their numbers have significantly dropped as well. So just the whole area, the Southeast, the Bell, Maywood, Cudahy, Southgate, Huntington Park area has just seen a really significant drop. And I have communication with another charter school that's actually out in the Southgate area, and they've witnessed very similar drops as well. So it's been difficult. And on top of that, it's also our type of approach is a very hands-on approach. And so with the pandemic, it's been difficult to have those connections with people that we normally would have. And now that things are opening up, we've been able to start up those connections, but it is going to take some time. I don't know if that answers all your questions or if you have any other specifics.
Thank you, Jason. I'll turn it to Laura. Laura's brand new, brand new for this year, but not brand new to Magnolia. So I'm pretty sure she's hit the ground running and she's working with Jason. So Laura, I'll turn it to you just to share your thoughts of how you're feeling as you were getting the year started and you're at the helm.
Thank you. And thank you, Sandra, for the opportunity to speak. Obviously, this is my fourth week, so I'm still within my 30 days of starting and learning the school. But fortunately, I know Magnolia very well, and I really understand what has been, you know, our shining components. So something that I've been really focused and invested has been in cultivating the school culture and really focusing on the academics. So with that being said, one of the big components that I realized that is really pulling students, you know, other than, you know, what Jason just addressed, has been a lot of the magnet programs that have been starting up in the area. So definitely focusing on the academics is very important to me. Secondly, I've been working with students already focusing on that sixth grade and starting programs like the academic pentathlon and getting back to our academic competition programs to really help us shine and get our word out. I do believe that having a strong student ambassador program where they're out and about and, you know, winning medals and competing at the highest levels is truly going to bring positive attention to our school. So that's where my focus is right now. I'm really excited for the work that we have planned out. I hope you get a chance to come in and visit. I know Dr. Yepanel today visited the school and campus, and I know he met with students and staff. So hopefully you got a little sense of, you know, what it's been like the last 30 days that I've joined the team and what has been our main focus, which is absolutely focused on doing what we're really good at, which is the academics. And if our academics is high up, skyrocketed, then there's no way that our students are going to leave us.
Thank you, Ms. Shultman, and congrats on your new position as well.
And Sandra, and then, to your questions, yeah, I think you had a question for Santa Ana. Although Stephen's not here, Maria is here. So would you like to hear from her?
Yes, please.
Okay. Maria.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. This is Maria Rowell, and I'm the elementary principal in Santa Ana. And I would just like to add to what Laura is saying in that, you know, with and Jason, and with the pandemic, really our population has, you know, shifted and moved out of state or moved to the Inland Empire for us. I have to say last year, even our homeless and foster youth population, we had about 29 students. And as of this week, we now have 7. So that's wonderful to celebrate, you know, that they have, you know, perhaps, you know, found a single family home, or, you know, found a stable housing situation, you know, outside of Santa Ana. But that really has attributed to a lot of our enrollment declining. And I would say now with the pandemic lifting and in Orange County, us allow, you know, being able to have a lot of outside events, you know, we want to continue with what Laura had started many years ago and really, you know, highlight the community events and celebrate our name, get our name ID out there. And also just to celebrate Alfredo's, our Magnolia celebrity, and continue to highlight Magnolia with Facebook live feeds and just, you know, continue to get our name out into our communities so that way we can increase our enrollment.
Maria, I have a question. Do you happen mm-hmm. to know the breakdown as to how many students we have missing from each level, like K-5 and 6-8 and 9-12?
Off the top of my head, I don't have that. I can absolutely get that for you by tomorrow if you would like. Okay. But yeah, but I mean, across the board, TK-12, you know, we do have somewhere around 35 students, you know, where we've missed our enrollment targets. We still have enough class size wise that we have well over 20 students per classroom per grade level, TK through sixth grade. So to highlight and celebrate, you know, that we love that we have that, you know, small class size feel at our school community. And that's something that we celebrate and highlight when we do, you know, offer school tours, or when we have like kindergarten roundups, because we know that that's something that is attractive to new families.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And I do have that, Sandra.
Oh, perfect.
For our TK, the target enrollment for TK was 10 students, and new complete 6 students are TK, mm-hmm. 16 are kindergarten. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong numbers. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm like, wait a second.
These are the numbers you're providing are the numbers that we were targeting and we didn't hit, or what Let numbers me, are you?
Yeah, so I was looking at the wrong column on this. Oh. So 1 second. So okay. Target enrollments, are you want to know what we currently have enrolled for each grade level, correct?
Well, my concern is what grade levels are we missing most of our students from those 36 that we're missing that we couldn't hit target? Okay. Is it high school? Is it middle school? Is it elementary?
I would definitely have to say, this is Maria Rowell, the elementary principal. Mm-hmm. I would add that, you know, we really need enrollment in the TK kinder area, mm-hmm. in our lower grade levels, as well as then at the high school level. You know, I would say from 11th and 12th grade, because we do have a rather large 9th grade class compared to other academic school years. But again, I think that has to do, you know, could that be partially from the pandemic? Perhaps, and that families are, you know, looking to either continue with homeschooling their students, or they're afraid to have their kiddos come onto campus. And that's where, you know, really being part of our community, and getting our name ID out there would greatly benefit and boost that enrollment in the lower elementary realm.
And we also see the shift from eighth graders to ninth graders. So yeah, looking at the older grade level, Sandra, possibly some students that select another high school for ninth grade. But on the plus side, MSA Santa Ana has added CIF sports, right? They're now becoming very competitive in that area. If you haven't been able to watch some of their games, they've definitely beat competitors that some of the students have selected in the community. So that's really good news as to bringing these other extracurricular activities onto their site. So looking forward to that enrollment increasing.
And so for the kindergartens, is it because families are just enrolling their kids later on, like to first grade or?
As a whole, Sandra, for kindergarten enrollments, that was a hit that the entire nation took during the pandemic. And if you remember, the pandemic is really, we're not out of it fully. So it's like whenever you think of whatever the current grade level is, think of 2 years back, right? So that's why when we think of our current second graders, those were kindergartners when the pandemic started. So that's something we're seeing across the nation, like kindergarten as a whole, parents didn't enroll or in TK didn't enroll during the pandemic. And so we either saw a lot of families either select homeschooling or other options. So that's definitely still a shift we're monitoring to see how that's going to continue to play out, because the other impact historically is that birth rates are very low right now. Birth rates are very low. Birth rates haven't been this low. I was just on a webinar since the 1930s, 1933, after the Great Depression. The other time we saw birth rates also kind of take a dip was during the recession. So 2008, 2009. So keeping all of that historical context in mind also plays a role. Another thing that was mentioned, a factor, is immigration. Also immigration low. So that all plays a role, again, with these younger children enrolling. So that is what we're seeing across the nation and in California, kindergarten.
Thank you. That helps a lot. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments from our board members?
Yes, I had a quick question. Why MSA 1 and 2 increased? What is the magic there while the rest of the campuses has lost students?
Yeah, so Alfredo, I think you can talk a little bit more about that also, but promising practices, and this is part of the SWOT analysis, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So a really great example for MSA 2 is that strategy I mentioned about, as he's saying goodbye to his exiting students, he's welcoming any new students and actually making the pitch during graduation. So the other thing is it's holistic. It's a school culture. And they're the ones that, as Sandra witnessed herself as a former parent of MSA 2, she saw the shift in really leveraging PBIS. And that work was also when Mr. Keskin Turk was there. So Keskin Turk was there, Mr. Garner led PBIS, and then continuing that work is now he is the principal, David Garner, of that school. For MSA 1, Mr. Rubacaba, I think you could talk more about that one.
Well, I think we have Mustafa on the line. Mustafa, are you still with us? Mustafa, you want to talk a little bit about your school community? What has prompted the members and the students to come to MSA 1?
Sure, Alfredo. Hi, everyone. This is Mustafa Sahin, last year principal of MSA 1. So what has been working very well for MSA 1 was word of mouth. You know, we kind of have been very good with the customer satisfaction. Let me just put it that way. So, you know, we have taken everything very seriously. If we had any parents or any students coming to our way, just, you know, complaining or asking something or requesting something or, you know, bringing anything to our attention, we have been taking, you know, we have been closely paying attention. and trying to build that family feeling environment among not only staff, students, but also the parents. I think that's that has been our big strategy so far. You know, when I always ask the new incoming parents and students just to see how they heard about us, how they decided to enroll their kid, they were like, oh, you know, my neighbor, my cousin, my, you know, very close relative, very close friend, whatsoever. So that was the main reason why we have had, you know, increase our enrollment last year as well.
And whether this was done intentionally or not, MSA 7 does support that enrollment from MSA 7 going to MSA 1. And whether that was strategized or not, that's something that I've discussed with Megan. And she said, actually, principal that's not on the call, Brad made sure to go to the school as well at MSA 7 and would talk to students. And so that's why we also saw MSA 5, like their enrollment was well, and then they had to shift over to a different campus, right? So then we see their enrollment kind of take a hit. So just keeping, again, it's really important to keep that context in mind, but definitely, yes, the flagship school struggling during construction, right? Mustafa, the struggle of having two different sites during that construction and then being able to come out of that construction time to now have a beautiful campus welcoming more students. So it's collective work.
So yeah, from my point of view, Dr. Yapanel, it's like what Mr. Sahin said. Just parent involvement, just staff, the principals, just that welcoming and just that involvement, that relationship, just allowing us to work together and just building that to make families happy to have their students there, to, you know, like what he said, word of mouth, you know, and just say, oh, you know, there's MSA 1, there's MSA 5, there's MSA 2, you know, so word of mouth, but it has to do with how families feel in our campuses. That's the main goal.
Thanks so much, everyone. Was there insightful?
Thank you. Any last comments or questions from our board members?
I just wanted to summarize my visit, if we have a few minutes.
Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Yapanel.
Yeah, I took the last day of mandate before it goes into effect to visit two of our schools. I started with MSA 3 in the morning. I really had a lot of fun with the students discussing, talking. They were really engaged. I especially visited senior level classrooms to see what they were up to for college. And I also visited one of the home rooms where they were doing college applications. And I was able to speak to a college counselor there who was helping with the students. Overall, all of the staff members were really happy. I asked if they needed anything. They seemed to be to have all of the resources that they need for providing a good education. One thing I saw was that the principal were busy really trying to implement the COVID compliance protocol. So there's a lot of overhead on the principals and admin staff following through these protocols. So I think it's taking about 30-35% of their time. That's just follow through. So which means that they really don't have now enough time to go to the classrooms, provide support to their teaching staff. But I guess this is there isn't much we can do about it. Later on, I went to MSA 8. That was also a great visit. I spoke to eighth graders a few times. The staff members were also happy there, and I received very positive feedback about school culture and environment. I also saw one of our alumni actually come back to work for us, which was really nice. She started as a professional. I would love to see more of our alumni actually come back to Magnolia to work for us, so that they actually could continue to provide such a great education to upcoming generations to give back to the community. I would like to thank MSA 3 principal, Mr. Özel, and then Laura for hosting me today. And I really encourage the rest of the board members to show up on those campuses as much as they can. I think it provides opportunity for staff to meet board members just to see their face. I think it's helpful also for students to show them that there is a board, members of the public, unpaid volunteers supporting their education. So please do make time to visit those schools. Thank you again for everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanon. Any last questions or comments? Perfect. If not, we'll move on to the last item with 5C, review and discussion of significant disproportionality, comprehensive coordinated early intervening services, CCEIS plan for Magnolia Science Academy 1. Will be presented by Mr. Ajar, our Chief Academic Officer.
Good evening, board members. This is Erdinç Ajar, Chief Academic Officer. I'll turn over to Dr. Kalam, our Special Education Program Director for this item. But before, I want to thank everybody reviewing this data, coming up with this improvement plan, and then having our systems and practices improving with this process, specifically to the MSA 1 team, Chelsea, the past principal, Mr. Sahin, and the current administration. It took several months for the team to dive into a process, reviewing data, working with a consultant and other stakeholders, including our SELPA directors and such. So, with that, thank you, everyone. And Dr. Kalam.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Ajar. And this is Dr. Callahan, the Director of Special Education and Student Support Services for Magnolia Public Schools. And I do want to just address everyone. Good evening, board members and all of the stakeholders and administrators and community members who are on the line this evening. Okay, so I just wanted to, and I do want to say, Dr. Yapanol, there are 6 alumni, Magnolia alumni, working on the SPED team across Magnolia schools. And one is a resource teacher, fully credentialed, and we are very, very proud of them. So I just wanted to give everyone a shout out for that, because that's across all 10 schools.
Great. Yeah, I hope to have more.
Yeah, let's keep it going. I don't know about the other areas, but I know for SPED, we're representing pretty well. So I'm really proud of that. So we talked a little bit last year about the process that the California Department of Education does with their compliance monitoring and how they look at 18 areas of compliance. And when our schools are out of compliance in one area, we're given a corrective action. Well, for MSA 1, to no fault of the school, and I have to say that with all sincerity and honesty, we enroll all students. We don't discriminate. We don't say, oh no, you have an IEP, so you can't come to Magnolia. And consequently, Magnolia's SPED population is almost 20%. And so with that said, one of the areas that we were out of compliance 3 years in a row, because we had more than 3% of our Latino students being identified as students with learning disabilities. Any area that's out of compliance 3 years in a row or more is determined to be significantly disproportionate. And the state requires that, as Mr. Ajar said, that we hire a technical facilitator to come in and help us really look at the root causes to see what we can do to shore up our practices so that we can reduce those numbers. So as a result of a lot of work, months of meeting and diving through all of our policies, all of our procedures. Overall, they were very proud of our policies. I do have to say that Magnolia's policies and accountability portal and all of the documents therein were very impressive to the state. So we do appreciate all that hard work. We realized that the areas that we needed to improve were in the area of exiting students. We don't have a program for systematically exiting students from special ed once they are at grade level and performing at their optimal level for a significant amount of time so that there's no regression. So that is an area that we are going to add to our SPED policy once the plan is approved by the state. And we are going to find, you know, as a team, decide what those criteria should be in order to start exiting those students from special ed who have learning disabilities. Because a learning disability is not like an esoteric eligibility. It is an eligibility that can happen to anyone if you fall 3 years below grade level. So so once these kids are on grade level, we really should have a process to exit our students from SPED once they've reached certain milestones. So that's gonna be the crux of our plan. We have other areas we're going to touch on with regard to the LPAC process and assessment procedures. We are going to make sure that we have EL coordinators attend all of the IEP meetings where students are duly identified. And Katie Mann helped us really, really look at the root cause in that area, being that we are not looking at the alignment of the disability with what accommodations we're giving them on their SBAC test. For example, if a child has a visual deficit, then the accommodations on that SBAC test should align with that. And when they're taking the LPAC, if we see that for 2 or 3 years in a row, a student has had difficulty with the visual processing part of the test, the state allows us to remove two of the criteria for students to be redesignated as fluent English proficient. So those are the two main areas that we're going to, that we have addressed in the plan. We were able to get it in on time on September 30th. We could have applied for an extension, but I thank the team. Alfredo reviewed the plan, and as did Sandra, I want to call your last name. Covarrubias. I didn't want to say it wrong.
Okay.
So you guys, we do appreciate you both for looking at the plan and reviewing it so that we could get it in on time. And the principals that were a part of the team were Mustafa Sahin and Brad Planka and David Gardner and their teams. They did an excellent job. And we even had one of our community representatives from Mitchell Family Clinic participating as well. So at this point, what our purpose is tonight is to simply give you the overview of the plan and present the information to the board and thank everyone for your participation and take any questions or concerns if you have any.
Thank you, Dr. Callahan. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item? If there's no comments or questions, then no further action is needed for this item since it is a discussion item. And that concludes all of our items for tonight's meeting. At this time, I ask Ms. Covarrubias if you may please adjourn. The time is 8:36 p.m.
Again, I would like to thank everybody for attending our meeting and for all their hard work. And I'm now adjourning our meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Night. Thank you. Good night.
Take care of yourself. Bye.
Yeah, I'll go epic.